For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Limits, I apologize for that.
Very nice singing voice you displayed once again.
I was singing one of my greatest hits called Bob is the Nicest Man Alive.
And we give Bob a high five.
Yeah, that's the second part of the lyric. Very proud of that song. Bob, you've heard me sing it to you, yes?
I have. A lot of the thing about you, though,
Bob
when I come in here.
Bob is the nicest man alive. We give Bob a high five.
When that you one. Do this, these things stick with me. And then I become an annoyance to everyone I work with at KDKA because I'm humming and singing the Incrinculan song for weeks. I couldn't get out of my head.
Think how I feel. Well, I can't get any of this out of my head.
I mean, it's bad because I torture people at work because of your singing prowess.
I know. I had a mailman, I told you, 2 weeks ago say, thanks a lot. I can't get the I've done everything for Mulsey song out of my head. I just delivered mail for 8 hours. I said, no. I can't.
I love how your voice quivers
head.
Too. Every song that he sings quivers at the end.
You have to have nothing for me.
It's almost like the way he yelps. There's a quiver in there.
It's all anxiety manifested, Bob. That's how I deal with anxiety. Unfortunately or fortunately, some people smoke, some people bite their nails. I sing.
Will you sing when your daughter's on her first date driving the boy around?
I'll be following them. I don't know if I'll be
nothing following me.
I did that. I'll be the first to admit to you. We would go on vacations. I'd have these big camcorders, old school camcorders before these phones ever.
Yeah.
And if they wanted to go to certain places, believe me, I made sure I was in the area somehow, some way with my camcorder.
Oh.
That's terrible. But I guess, you know, when you really care about your kids, you care over. And I, you know, it's just part of what you go through emotionally with kids.
I know. And I'm dreading it. I'm living it, for God's sakes, already. All right, Bob, you had a very interesting night the other night, and we want to hear about it. The 74 Steelers were fated last night at the stadium, and you spent some time with these guys, Terry Bradshaw via video, but a lot of the guys in person on Saturday night. Tell us where you were, who you talked to, and some of the good stories.
It was a great time. It's always a good time at the Steelers alumni dinner. They have something every year, and they have a lot of anniversaries to celebrate over this year when you win all these Super Bowls, as they did, especially in the 70s. So this was the 50 years, Joe. It's hard to believe 50 years since 1974 Super Bowl IX. Mm. But these guys came in, and it's almost as if it's like, you know, if you have a friend that you haven't seen in a long time, but you could pick up right where you left off, that's what I gauge with most of these guys. So I had to MC the dinner, which was great. We had guys come on stage in different increments, different panels, talking about different parts of the season, beginning with the off season. And we'll start there because I forgot that there were six preseason games. Yes, and they won every single one of them. But what I didn't, and this became clear with guys like Rocky Blyer and Stallworth and Swan, who were part of this conversation, that because there was a player strike, a lot of veterans didn't show up. So guys like Stallworth and Swan, and even a quarterback like Joe Gillum, got a lot of playing time. Chuck Noll used that to make decisions on opening day. And that was when Joe Gillum was inserted as a starter, to which Terry Bradshaw, in the video that was put together by Steelers TV, which was a really good documentary about that season, felt his career was over at that point. He was thinking about where else he can go to get an opportunity to play because he felt like, wow, I'm being benched just because it was a player strike, whatever. And Gillum went on a roll. That's why this was interesting that, you know, the Fields-Wilson discussion. 50 years ago, it was Gillum, Bradshaw, and Hanratty.
Yes.
They had three of those quarterbacks, you know. And it was interesting to hear how Chuck Noll had to reassure Terry Bradshaw that this wasn't what you think it is. I'm riding a hot hand right now because he played a lot and you didn't. And then, you know, 4-1-1, all of a sudden there's a change. And as it turns out, it was the right change. So I thought that it was interesting to hear those guys talk about what it meant to get the playing time that maybe they wouldn't have gotten. The other thing, I was talking to too many of these guys, you know, you forget too, the draft was 17 rounds back then. And so 14 rookies made that team, which I totally forgot. I had no idea that many people can make that kind of team. You know? And they did. And it was fascinating. But, you know, the stories about Dwight White were my favorite ones. Of course, he's since passed, and there were a lot of people there who represented deceased members of that team. And his daughter was there. And the story about him getting out of his hospital bed after he was running a really high fever, I don't know what it was, like 100, 200, 3. Doctors told him not to play.
Yeah.
He thanked the doctors for their interest in his health, and he said, I'm playing. And not only did he play, but he was significant in the amount of plays he made on that defensive line. So these are all things that come back to life after you forget about most of the details. And then when they talk about him, then it's like, oh, man, I remember that. He came out and played, and he shouldn't have played, but he did.
Jack Ham talked about that on Friday and credited that he said that was the height of the Steel Curtain, meaning the defensive line, and that they dominated in 74 to the point where, you know, it was easy to make plays behind them. You know right. what I mean?
Here's the other thing in that, and it was interesting in the Super Bowl that year against Minnesota, they made 3 interceptions. I had forgotten that Joe Green made one of them. He only had, I think, 2 picks in his entire career. One of them was in that game. But the hitting, looking at videotapes that were played that night at the dinner, the hitting was off the charts. Every one of these guys would have been fined or suspended today. And that was the one takeaway when they looked at that. And a couple of guys, Gordon Gravel being one of them, said, you know, if we had the kind of rules there are in place right now, Terry Bradshaw would have won 10 Super Bowls. He said that we couldn't do half the stuff that's allowed, that wasn't allowed back then. So,
what kind of spirits did you find Joe Green in?
He was great.
Yeah, he's always great, huh?
He really is. And he was talking a lot about how there was an internal competition about who would have the most significant hits in the postseason.
Mm.
Things of this nature. It's funny and it's interesting to hear them talk about those days 50 years ago this week.
Just
this
amazing,
year.
Amazing stuff that everything. I mean, the Immaculate Reception announced the Steelers as a force to be reckoned with. And Jack Ham agreed, the actual win that catapulted them to a dynasty was the AFC title game in Oakland 2 years later.
Right, right. And the thing about all of that run-up was the fact that they totally relied on the run game. More so than you ever think. Like in the Super Bowl, I went back and looked because I was curious how many times that both Harris and Blyer carried the ball, combined 51 rushes in that game. They hardly used, you know. And that's what makes it, you know, when you look at that era, Swan's numbers don't necessarily add up, but significant plays do in those big moments. So it was interesting also with those guys in the house, that catch, which one was it with Pickens? He juggled it. I don't know which Super Bowl Swan made that. Was it that one?
That was the first Dallas one,
okay,
yeah,
Dallas
against
one.
Mark
but
Washington.
It was very similar.
Yeah, now that I think of it.
Bouncing it up in the air,
yes.
Somehow looking and making the catch, you know. So it was a very interesting weekend for sure.
That's
I think everyone
great
who
stuff.
Was there had a really good time.
Well, you just reminded me, Pickens just seemed so happy last night, didn't he? I mean, for good reason, they went to him, and they went to him for big plays, gave him chances to make plays. You know what I mean?
Yeah, well, there was no snap management in that game last night.
Yeah, I noticed that.
There was when he becomes a big, and when he's engaged, and that's the thing he has to do every day. He has to be engaged. If you're engaged, good things can happen to you, and I think, you know, it wasn't that he wasn't targeted early in the season. He was. It's just that when he wasn't engaged because of whatever was happening, whether it was being missed by or overthrown by Fields at times, he became disengaged. He can't do that. So he was engaged last night. When he's engaged, he's as good as anyone in the league in terms of body control, hand-eye coordination. And when you have sort of a mismatch, I don't understand why Sauce Gardner, maybe he was injured at the time.
He was injured at times in the game, yeah.
But he was still in there at the end. I wonder why, you know, that matchup wasn't every single down.
Pickens, 79% of the snap. So there was.
What was it 2 weeks ago, 50-something?
Yeah.
50-something.
There was no, we're saving him for late in games and later in the season and all that crap. He's got to be on the field and the ball's got to be coming his way, period. I mean, he's a star. When he's right.
He is. And he's the biggest star of their wide receiving group. And when you know, I'm looking now down the field more, knowing that Russell Wilson can do that. He's going to make it. And all you want is a chance. You know, people can, and those throws look to be underthrown at times. But when you have one-on-one coverage and he's the one on your side of that,
yeah,
I think I'll take that all the time.
Me too.
Because he has the strongest hands going up and
all
get that
time.
Ball.
Yeah, all the time.
Throw it up and let him make a play. We hear that all the time. It doesn't have to be a perfect pass. It just has to be a pass that gives your guy a chance, a legitimate chance.
I saw Baker Mayfield. There was a clip yesterday of him on Mike Evans on the sidelines going crazy, saying, if they want to cover him one-on-one, I'm going to him every blank in time. And the same way with Pickens. Not just once. Like, I mean, you know, remember the game-winning play last year, Pickett to Pickens against the Ravens. Saw him one-on-one out there. I'm going to him. Feed him. He needs to be fed, right?
They all need to be fed.
I mean, the second one was lucky, but at least you're putting it up there for him. Went off the defender. I'm talking a lucky pass. It was a great catch.
Right.
But it was, in the end, it, if you give him a chance, he's your star. Najee's looking more and more like a star suddenly, too. I would wager to say these are the best back-to-back games of his career. And maybe he's put up more total yardage or even rushing yards in back-to-back games. I don't know. I didn't check. I've never seen him look better. He's ripped off runs of almost 40 yards twice now. He looks like a different guy. Right. You think so?
I think so. I think he looks motivated that he didn't get his fifth-year option, which is I thought would be his way of treating that whole season. And he's starting to do that now. He understands that even if it's not here, and I'm not ruling that out at all, I still think they would want him back.
Well, that's a question. Why don't we deal with that right now, Bob?
Yeah, because if he's running that way, the 1-2 punch that they have with those two guys, I don't care what the price is. I still would do it for, shorter term, but I would do it. It depends on what he wants.
And what do you think he will want? Do you think bitterness will carry over to the offseason where he'll be like, get me out of here?
No, because everyone talks about business. They know what business is. He may have been, disappointed he didn't get it or even angry that he didn't get it. But he's turned that into something pretty good here in the last couple of games. And if that continues, and again, the thing I always say this about him, regardless of how he runs, the yardage, anything else, the guy is very, very secure with that football, which may be the announcer's, jinx here. But really, I mean, he's carrying people on his back. He's got five guys around him poking that ball. He never gives it up. That's a huge. You saw that guy from the Jets last night, the punt return. How many times did he's lucky that ball was out of bounds twice. There would have been two live balls on the field. So that's a big part of this, and he knows how to protect the football.
So he's on pace for 1,160 yards, and he's back over 4 yards a carry, and I think he's also showing more burst, more get down the field ability, if that's a phrase I could use, Bob, because he is.
Yeah, he is.
He's got runs of 34 and 36 the last two. I just love the way that he looks right now. And I think he sort of hit bottom against Indy. That was a very odd game. Didn't look great. It looked horrible, actually, against Dallas. But these past two games, that looks like a guy you draft in the first round.
Yeah, what do you think a market would be for him? What do you think he would want?
I think he would want.
Now you see some of the guys,
I think years.
Derrick
before
Henry got
money.
1 year, $10 million.
Yeah,
I mean the high end guys. You got.
You're not getting that.
Jahmyr Gibbs is eventually going to cash into a big. What is Christian McCaffrey make? $16 million a year. That's not going that high, but is $10 million out of the realm of possibility? As a guy who touches the ball as much as he wants. We talk about the running back being in the diminished position when it comes to, but they touch the ball more than anyone other than the quarterback.
I mean, you look at some of these guys, Josh Jacobs, a $48 million deal, $12 million a year. Joe Mixon got about $10 million a year with $13 million guaranteed. Tony Pollard went out, got $21 million total, $7 million a year. I'd say somewhere upwards of 7, 8, 9 a year.
Yeah.
For let's say 3 years. Does that sound reasonable?
The question is, would he take that?
I don't know that he's going to go out on the, I love the way he's running. I don't know if he goes out on the open market and absolutely kills it. We're still talking running back, Bob.
Yeah, but people, you just cited guys who had opportunities to sign free agent deals. Derrick Henry got $10 million a year. You said what Tony Pollard got, which was less, but still
multi-year.
Well,
hold on a second. Hold on. Derrick Henry got 2 years for $16 million. Is that right?
Okay, maybe eight. I thought it was $10 million, but
no, he only got $9 million fully guaranteed. I mean, there were a lot of questions about.
But he's
him.
Also in his 30s. Yeah. Najee isn't.
Yeah.
So
I think $8, $9, $10 million is about the max.
Do you think
here.
That's you think they're getting max Saquon value out of him? Sure,
Saquon
they are.
Barkley is on a $37 million deal, at $12.5 million a year. No, I think the most Najee could hope for is about 10. But if the question is, would I do it 3 years, $28 million, something like that? Yes,
I would too. But the question is, how many other teams may be willing to go higher than that if they see him as one of those guys?
Based on the market in recent years, or now for a fairly long time with running backs, not much higher. Not much higher.
Well, it's one of the offseason things that will be followed very closely.
I'll say. It's a huge story. All right, Bob. What do you say we take a little trip around the league, starting in Cleveland with just an ugly scene with Deshaun Watson? Let's talk about that. Coming up next, we'll do a little report card top of the hour and get back into the story of the day, which is Russell Wilson, where we've spent most of our day.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
You're going to be part of our Malzy Christmas album as a guest. Myself, Limits, and Donnie Football are going to begin recording this week. I think Donnie Football may narrate parts of "Twas the Night Before Malzy." And we have other specials planned, some great songs. Limits, do we have a studio yet for Friday morning?
No, I did not realize that that would be on my agenda to book this week.
I talked to you before the show about recording songs for the Malzy album, did I not?
You did, but I didn't know we needed a specific studio and couldn't do it in our studio.
Bob, would you be a guest on one of these songs and guest star?
As long as you give me the lyrics and I could work with them. And
sure, you know. Is there a carol in particular you'd like to sing with Malzy's name inserted?
"'Twas the night before Malzy, and all through the house, Joe Starkey was lurking."
That kind of stuff.
He definitely has that machismo.
Yes, exactly. So we're going to begin taping on that this week. It's very exciting. Can Donnie sing?
That is not something that I know the answer to.
Can
we
you
haven't
imagine
tested it out yet.
Donnie with that classic sort of yinzer machismo is a good word for it, narrating some of these Christmas carols. Not singing, talking.
Like Santa flew the reindeers over the mine. They're really like looking at the point in the incline coming down.
Like a Yinzer poetry reading, Bob. It's going to be unbelievable. Meantime, let's take a look around the NFL before we get back to the Steelers quarterbacks, the Steelers' place in the AFC, all of that at the top of the hour, and perhaps a Ray Fittipaldo report card, because it's another eventful week in the league, and everything in the AFC that happens affects the Steelers. Let's start in London, where the London Jaguars, was it in London? Am I right about that? Right?
Yes, it's
that's
their home away field. From home, yes.
Yeah, the London Jaguars beat the Patriots 32-16. Nobody really cares. Do you think the Jags can make it back here and get in the mix?
No, but I did like the fact that they decided, because they saw an opportunity to run the ball 17 straight times and change the game completely because of that.
Tank Bigsby was a monster.
And New England
in that
couldn't
game,
stop him. Could not stop him.
Bengals 21, Browns 14. The Bengals sneaking back into the race here. They're 3-1 on the road, but the story is Deshaun Watson. And man, when I saw that Achilles snap, and you could see it, it reminded me of being over at the LA Fitness at Settlers Ridge playing Andrew Filippone in a 3-game series, which I was leading 1-0, 17-13 in game two, when my Achilles snapped, Bob, and it felt like a piece of rope just snapped. And then the crowd cheering the injury and Browns players just sounding off after the game about it. I don't know if you can find either Jameis Winston or Myles Garrett limits, but it was kind of an ugly scene in Cleveland. It sure was. And I guess the upshot of it all, Bob, is will Deshaun Watson ever quarterback another game for the Browns?
My gut would tell me no, just because it's going to take the surgery and the rehab from that. He has 2 years left on a contract, and they have to pay him regardless. He's going to make all that money. But my gut would tell me no.
I agree with that. And I think in the end, this may give them the excuse, the reason to just get out of that deal, because he's not playing, obviously, this year. Next year, it's a year-long injury at least,
right?
Really. You say, well, he's not quite ready. So I think if he's ever going to play for them again, it would probably be at the beginning of the 2026 season. And I don't think it's going to last that long. It's just the whole franchise feels cursed right now, and he feels like the energy drag on that franchise, right?
There's no question. First of all, the blame should go to the owner. He's the one who wanted this. And if you're Deshaun Watson, despite everything he went through, how would you turn your back on that kind of money? You wouldn't.
What'd you think of the cheering of the injury?
I don't like that. You can have whatever opinion, and I have a bad opinion about him and what he did prior to that led to suspensions and everything. But I don't cheer injuries. I mean,
I just wish some of the Browns players had been as passionate and eloquent and intense in speaking out against what he is alleged to have done multiple times as they were about him.
Yes, that's a good way to look at it.
Cheered. So I don't know,
because they didn't say much about that other than he was on their team and they welcome him in. But
I mean, when Myles Garrett calls him, he called him a model citizen in college and a model citizen in the pros. Really? Really, Miles?
I don't listen to a lot of what Myles Garrett says.
I mean, just that franchise has sunk to the bottom of maybe American sports right now. Is there a sadder franchise than the Cleveland Browns in all of sports?
That's a good question, but I would say no off the top of my head. I'm thinking about there are a lot of teams I could think of in the NBA that haven't done anything in a long time, or for that matter, baseball teams that haven't done anything in a long
time.
Sure,
that's just on the field, yeah. Though. Everything surrounding the Browns is a disaster.
Right, yeah, I mean, Myles Garrett, he's now the spokesperson after he attacked Mason Rudolph, and he could have done damage there, with that helmet.
Joe Burrow, meanwhile, definitely back on track. And the Bengals, I still think, are certainly going to be a factor in the wild card race, if not in the AFC North. You, as long as they have Burrow throwing to Higgins and Chase.
They got two of the best in the game right there. Chase had, I think, six touchdowns already this year now. So, I think they're going to be a factor. Their defense has a lot of holes in it. I think they can be exploited. I think the Steelers and the Ravens have two at the top, and I give the Steelers the edge over that defensively in this division. So if you can get whatever you can get, if you could get, like yesterday, if you can somehow limit the other team to, 15 points to 20 points in that range, which they've done pretty much all year, the defense, your offense should be good enough to score a little bit more than that. And I think that's why people are optimistic about this thing now.
All right, let's move into a two-minute drill with limits involved here. Your first thought could be anything on a game, Bob. Packers 24, Texans 22. Jordan Love's my MVP. He's starting to look like it. Texans with only 3 second-half points, Bob.
And CJ Stroud had only 86 yards passing. I think something went wrong there in their pass game for sure. But, Jordan Love came back from that injury, and he has been dynamic. So, that Green Bay team is one to reckon with.
Yeah, I agree pretty much with everything that you said, Bob, and every syllable and half syllable that you uttered, and I really don't have too much more to add.
Colt, I know you were on the phone there, Limits, and that was very unfair of me. I didn't know you were on the phone, and we want to get your thoughts on these games. So we'll start with Colts, Dolphins. First thought that comes to mind, Limits?
The Colts are not good, but the Dolphins are just horrendous. And Tua's coming back in a couple weeks. Maybe it's next week. Indianapolis is better off with Joe Flacco. Anthony Richardson is a bust.
I would agree with the early trending toward bust, and I think Joe Flacco is a better answer, and Joe Flacco would have been better served staying in Cleveland. If you're Cleveland, they didn't want him there, and now they're paying the price for that as well. So they've made a lot of bad quarterback decisions over the years in Cleveland. Flacco's old, but he's still capable of doing things that no one else on that roster can do, and he should be starting for Indianapolis every day.
I'm keeping an eye on the Dolphins if I'm a contender, because they have a lot of interesting pieces that aren't adding up for them but could really help another team. Vikings lose to the Lions, their first loss of the season, 31-29. This was a great game, and Jared Goff has become, you know, Mr. Perfect here. What is happening, Bob? He's gone 18 for 18, 18 for 23, 18 for 25, and yesterday 22 for 25. It's unbelievable what is going on with him.
He's a terrific quarterback. He was number one overall for a reason. Things went bad a little bit. They made that trade, and it's a good trade for both because Stafford won over there with the Super Bowl. I think the Lions right now are a team that they got no weakness, even with losing Aiden Hutchinson. That team still can outscore you regardless of what you give up and take advantage of his absence. I love Jared Goff and what his surrounding cast offers.
And the Vikings, I mean, in the last minute of the game, had a chance to win it as well before Detroit really took it away from them. Ben Johnson's a great coordinator. Maybe this is Detroit riding the high of playing for Aiden Hutchinson after 1 week, but it's why I picked them to go to the Super Bowl and win it.
All right, we got to move faster. Here we go. I'm clapping at the line of scrimmage, Bob. The passes
all right,
are going to come
out fast. 2 minute drill, let's go.
Eagles 28, Giants 3.
Giants suck.
Saquon Barkley revenge game, all right.
Daniel Jones mad that he didn't play? What a joke that is, and what a great thing for the Steelers that broken team comes here for a Monday night game. Rams 20, the fighting Aiden O'Connell's 15.
Raiders suck.
Aiden O'Connell is hurt. It's back to Gardner Minshew.
Raiders suck. Commanders 40, Panthers 7. What are we doing here? Why is Andy Dalton playing? What's going on?
And Carolina then sucks. That's what's going on.
Marcus Mariota with a nice performance.
How about him? Bob. He had like a day like Russell Wilson had almost.
No Jaden Daniels, no problem. How about that?
Unbelievable.
Well, that's still a problem. Down the road, that they need him.
Yeah, it would talk be. About that game but they specifically.
They say he's okay. Chiefs 28, 49ers 18. My first thought is Brock Purdy stunk in this game, and Kyle Shanahan basically threw him under 9 buses after the game and was seen lecturing Purdy at his locker after the game. Reporters were like, we've never seen this before. He was bad. The Chiefs aren't even good yet, and they're 6-0. The Super Bowl goes through Arrowhead yet again. Have you seen their schedule coming up, Bob? Well, in case you haven't, let me refresh your memory. The Raiders, home against Tampa, tough game. Home against Denver. They also still have another game with the Raiders. The Browns, the Panthers, come on. The AFC is going through Kansas City again, whether anybody likes it or not. Mahomes isn't even good yet this season.
No, they've been just average as an offense. Their defense has carried them, and if their offense does get back on track and injuries subside, they're going to be hitting high stride. I didn't think they had a great performance yesterday either, but they won the game, and that's all that matters.
Very mediocre Brock Purdy once again going back into his rare form. With no Christian McCaffrey, continues to be an issue. San Francisco's got a problem. The Chiefs, though, I mean, can they finally just lose a game? Like, please?
Man, San Francisco just does not look Brandon Ayuk out for the year. You mentioned it. Yes. All right, Bob. Let's get to the report card top of the hour, shall we? We'll follow along with Ray Fittipaldo, who I think had a little bit high of a grade for one position and maybe a little bit low of a grade for the running back. Ray's a very tough grader. That's why every Monday morning he fields calls from angry parents of players. You gave my son the wrong grade, they tell him. All right. Where are we, Bob? What's happening?
We're at the 55-minute mark.
The 50-minute mark, to be precise. Brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township. Celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. We're also going to wind back to Russell Wilson, wind back to the Steelers' place in the AFC. It felt like an arrival of sorts last night. Like, this is who we are. They're suddenly engineering victory more fluidly, to borrow a Mike Tomlin phrase. And as I mentioned earlier, even he's sick of the 1918 games, or at least realizes that that's not the place you want to be. So many people think that's how the Steelers want to play. Maybe they have wanted to play that way under Tomlin, but he obviously has come to the realization that that's not getting him or them anywhere. You have to win by a lot, at least some of the time.
In the fast-paced world of attacking, speed is everything. And that's where the Furon 7 Plus shines. Engineered for accuracy and precision at a rapid pace, it's your secret weapon on the pitch. Experience overall comfort and precise striking, even in the game's fastest moments. The nylon outsole, with its V-shaped stud configuration, is designed for firm ground, giving you the grip you need to outmaneuver your opponents. Step up your attacking game and learn more and purchase the Furon at NewBalance.com.
I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.